Welcome to the Writer's Room, where the funny writers who sit in funny rooms and write funny stuff for other people finally get to talk. Here's your host, Emmy-winning writer and comedian, Jeff Cesario.
Welcome to the podcast, special edition. I call this the Writer's Room, just because I'm fascinated by this crap. I got two great writers with me today. The great John Max, who's done virtually every award show ever invented since, I think, Fire. I might not be going back far enough. And then Jeff Stilson, who's grown a full beard just for this occasion. Both of you guys have writer's experience beyond award shows. Great writer's experience. But let's focus on award shows, because here's what a home viewer sees. You know, they see a host come out, tell a few jokes. Then you get a round of applause. Presenters come out. They do a little patter. And then they start giving out awards. And then, you know, depending on how long the award show is, people stick around or they don't stick around. That's what it looks like to them. On the other side of it, it's kind of chaotic.
We hope it's
chaotic. Start with the host. How do you write for, or do you write for a host? How often do you get to write for a host, John?
On the Oscars, you know, I was lucky enough to write for Billy for five shows, and for Hugh Jackman for his, and Steve Martin for his, and with Jeff with for Chris Rock. And other times you're just writing the show. There's host writers and then there's show writers.
So the host writers come in, usually if it's a big name stand-up, right? They'll bring in a couple of their own guys. Right. Some of them will still take material from the writing staff. Others will not. They'll just stay right on their guys. So you get in a room. So now you got a room of how many? How do you assemble a room? I'm going to ask this of John too, and then we'll get you.
Badly,
of course.
Again, if you have somebody who's, again, like a Billy or a Chris Rock, they have a regular team almost. Like, it's okay. And maybe it'll change some years. Like, we need a new wide receiver this year. You know, we need
right,
to do
right.
But it's a basic core group. And then with others like Steve Martin, we, you know, there was a group, but we added in a number of people that Steve knew, like the great Dave Barry, for example, you know, wrote with. You know, and normally that's not what Dave Barry does. Hugh Jackman, of course, is not a stand-up, you know, again. So he was like, John, who are some good writers? You know, and then you get to recommend, or sometimes we'll say, we have these people. And then you're brought into a situation where you're the incoming quarterback. And also,
you hired the writers for Hugh Jackman?
No, I did not on that one.
I get a call.
I did not on that one. I came in as the Russell Wilson brought in to try to do what I could.
Yeah, did you have your head coach, or did you have the new head coach with Russell Wilson?
I kind of came in as the hired gun and moved on. And much like Manny Machado, I tried to renegotiate at one point. It didn't quite work.
So you get a room of writers together. Some are pure writers. Some are stand-ups / writers. Some have experience with this host. Some do not. You'll put that room together. Let's, for the sake of this, say it's a live room. You're in the room together. Jeff, you've been in a tremendous number of these rooms, from the Oscars to MTV Awards to Guy's Choice Awards to the weirdest awards.
I didn't do Guy's Choice Awards. Don't put that on me.
Oh, that's mine. That's just me. You weren't in that with me?
No, Jeff and I were busy.
I'm a whore, but
Jeff and I
go that far. Choice Awards.
Jeff and I were busy that week with Chabad Telethon, which was Edward James was the host.
On the food chain, that's above Guy's Choice. Oh, no, I didn't know that.
I just said I wouldn't do the Guy's Choice Awards, but I did do the Victoria's Secret, whatever that was. That monstrosity.
So you get in when you're writing monologue. What's the process generally?
It's different, right, John? I mean, you know, with Rock, you basically, when we both did the Academy Awards with him, both times he did it, it's like you run it like a late night talk show. You all submit jokes. Chris loves paper in his hands. He loves just pages of jokes. It's so pure and wonderful. He just wants to, he wants to go through pieces of paper and make ticks. And then ultimately he ends up writing it 99% himself. And you, if you get a tag, you're happy. You know, it's that type of thing. But that's, I mean, for him, that's how you do it. And then, I mean, isn't that generally how you do it? I mean, that's how Ellen does it too. I did it for Ellen. Shandling, same thing.
Yeah.
Billy.
When you have someone who's not a comic,
yeah.
John, Jeff, you brought up a great thing. They digest it in a certain way. Comedians digest stand-up in a very familiar way for those of us who are writers and stand-ups. You write the jokes, they select the jokes, they refine the jokes, they go on stage, they make their last choices, it's done. When you have someone who's not a stand-up, John, how do you figure out from them the best way to digest the material?
Yeah, it's, you know, again, well, first of all, and Jeff, you were with Billy, I know, 1 year and in the room. And with Billy, Billy likes to get the writers together and read the jokes out loud. And right. He would go, okay, beauty, Jeff, beauty, you know, and then with Billy, then he and I would sit. And then afterwards, when he took the beauties and kind of put it into the flow. With somebody who's not a stand-up, I give them a choice, which is if you give me your things you like, your selects, I'll kind of put it together in a flow that I think works. Or a lot of times, they'll sometimes just say, okay, you look at all the jokes that everyone submitted and give me a monologue. And that's a little harder because unlike a stand-up, it's not coming from them. They are trying to read somebody else's material.
Right, right. Wow. All right. So you're through the monologue, which for most writers, I'm going to guess, is still the most fun part of an award show because you know what you're getting. It's jokes. And it's usually somebody with some experience delivering the jokes. And then comes the free fall into no man's land.
Well,
go ahead.
Oh, I'll just say, look, it when you watch... When you watch Gervais host the Golden Globes, you're also looking forward to the intros. And Gervais is just taking it some other place. I mean, Chris did that on the Oscars before Ricky did it on the Golden Globes. I mean, it was, he went after the room when we did the Oscars both times. And he also did great jokey intros.
So now monologue's over, so you're thinking, I know a good writer's thinking, okay, we've got two avenues here. We have what Beth Sherman likes to call the connective tissue monkeys, which are the people who are good at just writing the crap that you're not even trying to get a joke in. Just give them the shtick, let them go out and read it and get to the award. And then there's the other track where it's like, where else can we tuck a joke into this bastard?
Yeah. Again, what we'll often do is take, you know, I would say with the intros, when you have a great host, like a Chris or a Billy or a Steve or whatever, they'll come out and they'll sometimes just do a joke. Welcome back to the 59th Academy Awards. Joke that was monologue worthy, but didn't make the cut.
Then right.
And say, and now you know him from the Writer's Room podcast, Jeff Cesaro. Okay.
Right.
Or they'll do a joke that will write specific jokes about that lead into you directly, about you, about your latest movie. You know him from this and this and this, you know. So Marty Short would introduce Steve Martin with, and now it's my honor to welcome the jerk. I'm sorry, that's his movie title. Please welcome Steve.
Right.
So you have that.
So you're constantly looking for places to tuck another joke in.
Right.
And yet that connective tissue, what we used to call patter, can sink a show faster than anything. Do you bring people on who are just good at that? I remember Buzz Cohan used to eat that crap up. And actually, Beth Sherman's pretty good at it.
Very good. She's really good. Again, when I think of connective monkey tissue, if you Google it, Beth Sherman's name comes up. And Beth is great at it. And, you know, so is Buzz. I don't know if he's still doing it. But yeah, it's hard, and it's really hard. The hardest part, honestly, Jeff, is the patter for two people who've been put on stage to present an award who have never met before in their life. And please welcome Sir Ben Kingsley and Topo Gigio. You know,
yeah. And Jeff, you've got to write this stuff not just for the presenters, not just for the producers or the writers' room, which are already three people to answer to, three entities to answer to, but then we bring in the giant elephant in the room, the publicists, who have to clear every frickin' thing their person says on stage.
They're awful people. They're awful. They're liars. They're schemers. They are the lowest form of show business life. There's no doubt. They do nothing except make things worse. And they lie about what their clients supposedly want. I can't tell you how evil they are.
Yeah. And then they lie about what you've written.
They lie about, they just, you can't trust them at all.
But they're there, and people should know that. If you're watching at home, it has been screened. If there's two people on stage giving an award out, there are at least three to five publicists who are literally henpecking a writer backstage to get this material right. And then the head writer, someone like John, has to come in and go, what the hell's going on? And at some point, John, I imagine you just have to go, I got other fish to fry. They're on their own. Yeah, and there's Hugh Fink getting beaten up by
three publicists. When you're doing Best Assistant Cinematographer Award, no one afterward is going, you know, I felt that the presenter copy that 15 seconds before they got to the best, it was not as worthy as it was 2 years ago. No, all people want to do is get started. To me, it's great. The reason Jeff and I and you love to work with the host is there's no filter.
Yeah.
There's
no filter, right.
And there are really good publicists who say, let me set you up with so-and-so. And they just make the connection there.
Oh, so
and
then you've leave met it. A good publicist. Have you really? I've never met one. I had one threaten my job once. I had one. It was see, you're so much smarter than I am, John. It was at the ESPY Awards, right? Which are made up awards anyway. There's no big academy or whatever. So there's this publicist there. I think it was from Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker, right? And they, I think Sarah Jessica Parker went through like 30 jokes, right? And according to her publicist, right? You never know. Did the publicist reject the joke or did Sarah Jessica Parker? So now you're to the 31st best joke. The best joke was the first one that you offered up. Now that's been rejected, and then 30 others have been rejected. Now you're the 31st best joke. And so it's finally accepted at this point. Just I don't know why, people just got tired of the process, I guess. So we're there. Sarah Jessica Parker is going to come out at some bizarre joke about the utility infielder for the Yankees, right?
I remember that.
Okay, so she's sitting next standing next to me and Bill Sheff, who's also writing on the show. And she says, this better work or it's your ass. And it's like the publicist does. And it's like, the show's over. We don't work here anymore. We're watching the show now. And so the joke, she does the joke. And I mean, there's not a peep. I mean, not a single person laugh. And Bill Sheff looks at her and says, oh, I think that did pretty well. And, you know, she looks at us and realizes I have no power here. And then just kind of walks off sheepishly. And we're laughing hysterically.
Oh,
but that's, you know, that's what they're used to, using their client's power.
Yeah.
And then once they have no power, it's
right. Once the show's over or the words are out of their mouth, it's over. Yeah, there's also this element with celebrities, which is often, very often, when you actually get to them, which is usually backstage, either mere seconds before they go on, or maybe you get a brief shot at them at a dress rehearsal, which is just as chaotic. Either way, when you get to them, the celebrity will look at you and go, oh, that's good. That's funny. Let's do that. And now you're scrambling to take out all the copy that had to go through 19 filters and get the joke the celebrity actually wants into the prompter.
I actually sometimes will back pocket those first 30 jokes. It's just I'll back pocket. Because then if the celebrity says, you know, I really don't like this one. Here, and they'll go, hey, right. This first one is really good. Why didn't you send that to me? Once on the ESPYs, you know, although Eddie Driscoll, Tony Danza was the host, I think. And the first three jokes were killer. And the fourth joke, Tony had written himself. And we kept saying, this doesn't really fit the flow. And he did it in crickets. And he said, I didn't write that. And I had to physically restrain Eddie Driscoll from running on the stage and attacking him.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's great. Then, often, in a show like this, especially if you've got a comic as a host or just somebody sharp and bright, you can write to the events of the show itself. That's when it kind of kicks into another gear, when you've got somebody good enough. I remember ages ago, I was working with Gary Shandling on a Grammys, and it was the year that Bonnie Raitt just cleaned up. And it was also the year, I believe, of another Denver Broncos Super Bowl loss. So at one point he said, I need something here. She's got four awards. And I said, if you're keeping score at home, it's Bonnie Raitt four, Denver Broncos nothing. Something like that. Yeah. But just the exhilaration of that for a writer standing backstage in a tux nobody's ever going to see, you know, you've gotten the opportunity to write to the moment. How is that for you guys? Is that fun? Is that hard? Is it both?
Both. I mean, to me, one of the most fun moments was, it was the year, I think it was 2003, and we were backstage with Steve Martin. And it was the year Michael Moore, through every speech, had been attacking President Bush. And every time he won, Directors Guild, Writers Guild, whatever. So he goes up and he wins for his documentary. And he does, it's an intolerable war, Mr. Bush. It's an intolerable war. And we knew we had like a minute and a half. And Steve looks and goes, what? And together, Steve and I and Dave Barry and whoever else was back there, we came up with something that went like, as he left, you could hear noises from the back booing. And Steve just came out and said, that's the Teamsters are helping Michael Moore to the trunk of his limo. And it just, I mean, it was Steve's delivery. It was Steve's joke. It destroyed. And he just came back afterwards, you know, and now please welcome whoever. And then he came back. He just went, wow. And it's that moment when you say, it's worth the Writers Guild minimum we're getting paid.
Right, right. That's another thing people don't understand. Writers have generally been scraped together from various corners of the universe to work for award show minimum. This is not like a minimum you would get on a sitcom if you were working 2 months. This is a blanket fee that is not a lot of money. That is, I believe, still four figures or very near to just four figures.
Getting the decimal point.
Yeah, right. And I think writers do it because there's a foxhole mentality about it, and then a feather in the cap on the top award shows. But if it's not the Oscars or the Emmys, even the Grammys get funky. So it's like, all right, I'm going to go in and just hang with a bunch of great writers and have a blast. That's often the motivation.
It's old show business. I love it. It's comedy variety mostly variety, but there's a little bit of comedy in there. But it's fantastic. This goes back, you know, decades. And there's something pure about that, being able to do a form I don't know how much longer it's going to last. But historically, you know, it's one of the oldest forms of of television. That's exciting. And you're around great people for the most part. Yeah, you've got the publicists that you have to deal with and some schmuck producers, but it's fun. I mean, it really is fun.
Is it fun all the way up and down the line? There's a pecking order. We just alluded to it. Clearly, the Oscars are still at the top. I think the Emmys are high. The Grammys are high. We have all worked those and then also worked, Jeff, as you say, the Victoria's Secret Award. I worked the Fashion Rocks Award show that Dennis Leary was hosting, which was great fun. And we slipped a joke in nobody got at the Fashion Awards, which was Tim Gunn makes Isaac Mizrahi look like Brett Favre. Wow. And like nothing. We're at Radio City Music Hall. Nothing, but we just had so much fun doing it. Does it become more fun in a way when you work the crappier shows?
But I don't know what you define. I mean, look, the Victoria's Secret, I don't know what that was. But there's clearly a motivation.
And you worked it.
There's clearly a motivation for taking that gig, right? But, you know, don't forget that Zoolander, the character Zoolander, came out of the VH1 Fashion Awards.
That's right.
The philosophy used to be, when Joel Gallen produced some of these shows, was just be as funny as you can. And we did that in the Academy Awards with Chris. We did a couple of film pieces. And, you know, Billy did great openings. It was a little different.
That's falling a little more by the wayside. There seem to be less and less shows that are looking for interesting sketch pieces, whether they're live or pre-tapes.
Yeah.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I
don't talent dependent.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, if Chris were to host again, I'm sure he'd want to follow the formula that he's done the last couple of times. But, you know, Ellen did everyone hates Ellen now, but Ellen's really good at these shows. I wrote her on the Emmys and the Academy Awards, and she's one of the best.
She's a crazy pro. She's unbelievably pro.
She's just, the truth is, she's funny as hell.
Yeah, and, she's hilarious. You know,
and she does comedy all through the
show. Yeah.
Yeah. So I loved writing for her, just because, you know, most of the stuff you just, in fact, I might actually have faxed material at some point. That's how far I go back with Ellen. But I just wait for her to have her second Chablis or Chardonnay and then send my jokes in. And she couldn't have been kinder.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's one of the best at it.
What was the weirdest host combination you ever worked for?
Well, John can answer that.
The weirdest host combination I ever worked
for. Or host. And I know, John, you're a major. You have lasted as long as you have, which is close to 73 years now, because you're diplomatic. So I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
Well, they're all great. So, I mean, so that's the harshest.
Speaking of diplomacy,
they're all fantastic.
Neil,
you know how hard that is for a guy from Philly to be that diplomatic?
Come on, tell us about Neil Patrick Harris. You worked on that, right?
No, I did not work on that Oscars.
You dodged that bullet.
I did not work on that Oscars with Neil in 2015. I had a pretty uninterrupted stint from 97 to 2014, and I did not get along with the producer. It was the only producers I really didn't get along with. And so in 2015, it was a mutual decision that I would not be doing that show. And then I came back.
You should go into the front office for a baseball team. Good Christ, that was...
That was good.
That was, somebody said, we put 43 mines in the minefield. How did John Max get through? And I know, John, I know you got to leave.
Yeah.
Whenever you have to leave, you just leave. Jeff, stick around and we'll clean up. Yeah. But John, before you go, highest point, lowest point of any award show you've done?
Highest point for me was probably the second year. The single individual moment was with Steve doing that watching that joke happen about Michael Moore. In terms of a whole show, the two would be probably with Chris, just getting to work with him. And then Billy, the second year, the year of the Titanic, we had a great film, opening film. We had a great song. The monologue killed. The presenter stuff he did, the intros were great. And 55 million people watched, which is...
Yeah, that's record. Big.
Yeah. So in terms of shows, I think it would be Billy in 98, Steve Martin probably in 2003, and then Chris, what was that, 2006, Jeff, or 2000 and 2016, I think.
I think so, yeah. Two. 10 years
and ago. And what's the weirdest? Because you,
damn it. Click. Wait, you're sneaky.
I don't care what other little Zoom shit you have. I need a bad anecdote.
Okay.
Me that at least. Okay, well, you don't have to say the host.
Okay. The worst moment was also my best story. It was just being backstage, watching, sitting there with two great producers, Mike DeLuca and Jennifer Todd, and seeing Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty announce the thing. And this is where I screwed up. Normally, I never take a sip of champagne till after the show. Someone cracked a bottle of champagne. I took a sip because they were saying the winner is La La Land.
This is the best picture award, correct?
Yes, yeah,
that picture. Warren Beatty swallows, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. I take a sip of the champagne because I just went, Faye reads because she grabs the envelope from Warren and says, La La Land. And then I see Warren with a puzzled look on his face. Somebody cracks the champagne. I take a sip, and then I see Gary Natoli, the stage manager, walking on stage. And this is in slow motion from there. Well, this is odd. Gee, I wonder what this is. Is the show over? Hey, Gary. And then Jennifer Todd takes off her headset, turns around and goes, they read the wrong name.
Oh, my God.
And I said, because I'm very quick in these things, goes, what do you mean? and she said, La La Land did not win. The wrong name. And I said, again, because as you know, Jeff, I'm pretty smart. I said, what does that mean? And so that was the moment. And again, it is the moment I am most about, other than obviously what happened last year, you know, with Will Smith.
Yeah. When you see something like that, I know you got to go. When you see something like what happened to Chris with Will Smith, what's the first thought goes through your mind, having done 100 of these?
My first thought, honestly, was, because Chris is a friend, was, is he okay?
Is he okay?
And then seeing how amazingly he recovered and handled it. Then my second thought was, will he get to the joke I had sent him? That was my second thought. you know,
that's great.
You know, and then the third thought was, once I saw that we were going to even be to talk to Chris, was because my political consulting, whatever it was, how can I help in this crisis management? And of course, no one asked. So that was that. There you go.
All right, John, I know you got to go. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great.
Stilson, stick around.
Again, this is fun.
We definitely will do it again. Thanks, John.
See you later today.
All right, now, Jeff, when you see Chris Rock get whacked, I'll be honest. My first thought was, if I were backstage, I'm not sure I could have prevented myself from going out there and just getting to the edge of the stage or something and saying, stop. No, nobody goes on stage and hits a freaking presenter, comic, especially Chris. I don't know what you worked with Chris. You produced his HBO show, which was hugely successful. You have a great relationship with him. You work on him on a continuing basis on projects. When you see that, what goes through your head?
It made me sick that no one just stopped the show and kicked Will out.
Yeah.
It made me sick. There are all these producers, two hosts who are friends with Chris, and no one had the wherewithal in the moment to just say, no, this doesn't, he doesn't get his little Oscar and get to give his speech about being I don't know what it was about being.
I can't even remember.
Thing ever. That's what upset me, because look at it. It was just a throwaway joke. Chris writes spectacular jokes. That wasn't one of them. It was just, it wasn't insulting.
But
it was, it, it was, It was,
I would say it serves a purpose as an icebreaker. And sometimes you do that, especially as a comic, when you're going out to present, you want to pop the balloon a little bit, get any weird air out of there. You throw a zinger out, a quick little just icebreaker, and then bam, then you're into the real jokes you've prepared. And he probably came up with it, maybe even backstage. Who knows when he thought of it? But I'm sure he thought of it as this is, he almost did it on his walk out. You know what I mean? It's just a total throwaway.
Yeah, it made me sick. And you know what? The truth is, Chris has done a million jokes about Jada Pinkett and Will Smith. What's weird about it is, Chris considered Will his friend. I wrote on the BET Awards for Will Smith and Jada Pinkett because Chris recommended me. And that's how much faith Will Smith had in Chris Rock. He hired his writers for the BET Awards. And I have to say, Will was great. I mean, he was respectful. That's why it also tore me up, because I've had some wonderful experiences writing for comedian. I don't know if Will's a comedian. I don't know what he is. I guess he's an actor.
Well, he's certainly a comic actor.
Whatever.
He knows his way around a joke.
He was really good to me. So I hated it. It's like seeing your parents fight in a way, except Chris, I'm bonded with Chris forever. We started stand-up together. I was the head writer on his show, the HBO show. I've worked with him on the Oscars. I just love the guy. He's fun to be around. He treats you well. We did a movie together. So I hated to see it. But somebody shouldn't have allowed him to make that acceptance speech and get his Oscar. You don't get to assault someone on national television. You just don't get to do it. And it was a vicious slap. By the way, he never would have tried that shit on Jamie Foxx.
No.
There would have just been blood and, some hair on the stage. I think that he only did it. It was a bully move. Anyway, I hope somehow, I don't think Will should be canceled. I think that's, but it was a level up from anything else I've seen. I've never seen anyone assaulted on stage.
Yeah. Out of all the award shows you've done, including Victoria's Secret.
Is that an award show or what was that? I don't even know.
It certainly falls into that category, an award special. Who knows what it is? That's a great point. A lot of these shows aren't even award shows, and yet they're written along that format.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Working on something right now called the Mark Twain Prize. So it's more of a tribute show, right? Even though someone gets, it's not an award, it's a prize. But doesn't involve money. I think that was Eddie Murphy's line. When I heard it was called the Mark Twain Prize, I was under the impression that I got paid for this. But they follow a different format where you have people come out and give testimonials or pay tribute to someone. They also had these one night onlys with Alec Baldwin. They did one for Alec Baldwin, one for Eddie Murphy, and one for Don Rickles. And I worked on all those, and they're spectacular.
Right. Because in what way?
Around these people that this was before Alec Baldwin killed anybody. Right. So you felt all right about him receiving the tribute. And those are unbelievably fun.
Why?
And I learned, I worked with John on all of those. And John taught me something that has helped me a lot. You have to write these drafts of 4 or 5 minute, 6 minute tributes that the various people will be delivering on the show. And that first draft is horrible. First draft is 5 or 6 minutes. That can take forever to write. So one day we're in the writer's room and John says, all right, what do we want to say about it was for the Rickles one. What do we want blankety blank to say about Don? And then we hit, well, he can say this, he can say this, he can say this, and he can say this. And John says, great, I'll be back in 20 minutes. And he went and he banged out a draft in 20 minutes, right? Right. Wasn't perfect, but it had some good jokes in it.
Yeah.
And now after that, it's just a matter of, okay, making it better. Rather than just, you know how first drafts are. You can spend days trying to get it right in your head.
Especially when the joke is not the primary concern of the producers. When plaudits are the primary concern of the producers. When kind words, when beautiful sentiment is the primary concern. And you've got a room full of joke writers primarily. It can really, really be difficult.
Well,
I remember we struggled with that on one of the shows I worked on for a Sexiest Woman Alive award. And it was just like, ay, ay, ay. You know, people really had to work to get the sentiment in it and then see if there's a way. For a comic, it's reverse engineering. For a comedy writer, it's reverse engineering. For the producers, it's like, why can't you just say something nice and let's move on?
Well, the great thing about those shows and the Mark Twain Prize, it's for American humor, not comedy, because it was on PBS and you can't, comedy is below them.
Too strong a word?
Comedy, yeah. It's like, oh no, we're
too
we're
street.
Smart people. We like humor. But now it's on CNN. No, the great thing about those shows is that they're for comedians, right? So they're not roasts, but they're somewhere between a roast and a tribute. So right. you get to do, you know, and you're working with really funny people. You know, you just think about like the One Night Only for Eddie Murphy. It had Rock and Jamie Foxx and, I mean,
wow,
Martin Lawrence, Tracy Morgan, just a bunch of really funny people, and Charlie Murphy. And so you're writing stuff for those guys, and they're, you know, they're helping you out.
Yeah, that's a different challenge. That's like, I got to bring my double A game here. I can't just,
yeah,
this isn't a regular award show. This is something I got to really crank
those
A material.
Those are really fun. And you know, you're working with them and then you keep, well, I like that, I don't like that. And sometimes, you know, you're just kind of giving them the first draft and they take it from there. Other times they'll say, oh, you got some other jokes here. Let's get rid of that joke. Let's do this. So those are fun. You know, especially once you get that first draft out. And I learned that from John Max. I mean, he's the ultimate pro. He's so good at every aspect of this. He's, first of all, he's a, you know, he used to write for Leno for I don't know how many years.
Yeah, nearly two decades.
He knows how to write jokes. He's great at structure. And, you know, he can take the edge off of the bullshit that you have to deal with on the show.
That's something we didn't touch on. And maybe it's good we didn't with John here. Because you bring up a great point. The head writer on these shows can make a massive difference for the staff as to how the experience is. Is it going to be a good experience? Is it going to be a bad experience? That's true on virtually any show in any room. It's especially true in these tight timeline gigs like award show. If you got a guy like John who's experienced just about everything, and who is completely unafraid to walk into a room of producers knowing he's going to get his ass kicked about something and just go do it and spare the writer's room so they can keep going. It's a weird and interesting combination of character traits that it takes to be a head writer for these gigs. And you've done.
You know John's history. He was a campaign manager before.
Yeah.
He was a comedy writer, so he had to deal with those egos, and he, you know, he takes that expertise with him to comedy, where you're basically the same type of person in show business as in politics. I mean,
less at stake.
They're just Uglier.
Same person, less at stake.
Well, I guess they're equally.
No, it's worse.
Yeah. Equally ugly, but less funny politicians. And, you know, John, so John brought that, but, you know, producers can also help you a lot. I don't know if you've ever worked for Jesse Collins.
Yes.
He produced the Golden Globes this year, along with Dick Clark Productions. And Jesse's really good at just kind of shielding the writers from the BS. He's right. Really good at it, you know, and then, well,
Don Mischer was always incredibly.
Mischer's,
yeah. That's a writer's producer there, which is really rare.
Mischer was, I think probably the first Oscars I did, Mischer was producing. He's just a pro. I mean, yeah. Well, look, at Peter LaSalle is the greatest late night producer of all time. And I think Mischer is the greatest. I don't know what you'd call it. It's not just award shows that he does, big event shows.
Yeah. Well, he hires good people. He hires good writers. He expects them to do their job. And because of that respect, writers do their job. They just do it. They just get the job done.
Yeah. And you just love working for him. He's just, God, he's so knowledgeable and he's a good guy and he's smart.
Yeah, he's not an asshole.
He just can run an operation.
And you know, you mentioned someone earlier that deserves a mention too, which is Joel Gallen, who between the MTV Awards and the ESPYs, which both in the 80s and 90s,
and
I think
the
ESPYs
Secret
didn't come around until the 90s. He did that too? Yeah, he does a lot of those. But he really kind of pioneered that kind of gonzo approach. I remember the ESPYs I worked on, which was really the first ones where they did funny stuff, and Joel just went in and said, it's going to be better if you let us do some funny stuff here. And Joel can be prickly, but boy, he's also got a great radar, and he's completely willing to admit when something ain't right. He'll just go, at some point he just goes, fuck it, that's bad. We're not doing that. And he'll just move on.
Joel's great. I mean, yeah, he can be a little high strung, but I don't think so much anymore. I think he's calmed down a lot, and he's really good at what he does. He's
unbelievable at what he does. And he made up these award shows with these networks. I mean, they didn't have anything. And he came in and went, okay, let's do this, 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 and this. We'll get funny shit in here. We'll get artists to come in here and do cameos. We'll get pre-tapes. You know, he really kind of pioneered super funny in all of that.
Joel and I are both Detroit Lions fans, so I understand why he's emotionally tortured.
Those were really fun shows. I mean, just coming up with things for sports people to do, and that's really the ESPYs. That's really where ESPN got the idea. Oh, this worked great. Let's bring some of this into our promos. And that's when they started to do funny promos. It all hinged off of a Joel Gallen produced ESPY Awards.
Yeah, I worked on the ESPYs a couple of times or a few times. I can't remember. But I got to work on the one when Norm hosted.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. And I think after that, they started to dial back comedy because, one, it was too funny. And the athletes, a lot of them just didn't like being the butt of jokes, you know,
yeah.
They just didn't like it. And God, Norm, I don't know if you remember any of the jokes from that.
I don't.
Oh, do you? It's one of the best jokes. I wish I would have written it, about how, Charles Woodson won the Heisman Trophy that year. And Norm's joke in his monologue, boy, there you go, Charles. There's something that nobody can ever take away from you. Well, unless you kill your wife and a waiter. It was like, wow, that's one of the best jokes I've ever heard. And I think it killed in the room, but it was one of those things that was one of those lines that was so funny. People had to laugh, but then they were ashamed of themselves after they laughed.
Right, right.
It was really God, he Norm. I miss Norm so much.
Yeah. That do was you play. How do you deal with the politics in a room? Because sometimes there are politics in a writer's room for these kinds of gigs, and there are writers who will do a variety of tricks to get their material in, in priority position, or to make sure that it makes the show. I think there's less and less of that, but it still does exist.
I think there's less. I don't even know. I mean, that's just never even been a consideration. I mean,
that's great. That's great.
No, usually you just, you submit your stuff and you hope it's good enough to make it on the show. That's never been a problem. I find the more difficult aspect, the publicist, if you're writing for presenters, it's the publicist who really just lie.
It's a tough cog. Yeah.
And they want, I don't know what it is. They want to hold sway over the show, but they're publicists. So that's the hardest aspect for me. But other than that, no, it's fun. You know, when you write, anytime you get to write for someone like Rock or Shandling or Ellen, you're happy because you want to.
Yeah.
Broke into this game writing for Letterman. And every day when you wrote something, he'd take it on TV and make it funnier. And if you can work for someone like that, you're happy.
That's great.
All those Rock and Ellen and Shandling, you wrote for Shandling, you know what it's like. Those, they make it so funny, and you just feel happy that you contributed.
Well, listen, Jeff Stilson, thank you so much for coming on. I can't think of a better way to get out of this entire conversation than actually either of us saying something nice, which you, thank God, covered.
Yeah, but can I just get it one more dig in at publicists before we go?
Sure, if you want. Yeah. I've had publicists go, he's got three sentences and my client only has two.
Oh, they're off. They're just really off.
And you go,
they're liars, and you know they're lying to you. And their clients know that they're lying for them, for them. And they, I don't know. It's like when you're injected with, you know, isn't penicillin just some? It's whatever disease you have. Don't they just inject that into you to kill it off or something? It's like that.
Yeah.
It's some awful.
Right. Well, it's like a vaccine.
Yeah.
Vaccines.
That's what
essentially teeny bits.
Build up immunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what publicists are. They're just something nasty that apparently is necessary in show business. But why? We have social media. I guess this show is going to be kind of a springboard into eliminating publicists from.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll co-host this, and within a year and a half, we'll see if we've made any dents in the ranks of publicists.
Yeah.
All right. My thanks to John Max, the great John Max, and Jeff Stilson, who's still hanging around here on the writer's room here. We're going to keep doing this. I'm going to mix it up on Play With Pain. I'm going to do some writer's rooms, and then we'll do some sports stuff still. But we're in a stretch here, folks, if you're avid listeners of Play With Pain, where we don't have that many sports. And I'm fascinated. I love being in writers' rooms. I love writing in them, and I love writers. So we're going to do some writers' rooms coming up here, and then we'll hit some good Play With Pains and some good sports. So thanks a ton for listening. Check out my album, What Was I Thinking? Streaming everywhere, or it's on the Sirius XM comedy channels. It's on Laugh USA or Laughs USA, I think, and Jeff and Larry's Comedy Roundup. So check those out. You can even write them if you want, Sirius, and request the clips. But I had a blast doing it, and I want to thank Sirius for playing them. So once again, thanks to Jeff and John. And we'll do it next week. Next week, I have the two writer performers from the old Adam Carolla podcast. I got Gina Grad, and I got Bald Brian Bishop. So we're going to sink our teeth into what it's like to write for a guy when you know you have to squeeze stuff in various spots, and that's going to be a fun one. Okay, folks, Thanks for tuning in. See ya.